Coming up, got a loaded episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Please hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. What a night in basketball. All 30 NBA teams played. College basketball started up. So to intro today's podcast, before I bring on my guest, David Thorpe, here are three thoughts from tonight, starting with the potential number one pick in the 25 NBA draft. That's Cooper Flagg. He made his Duke Blue Devils debut, and I came away very impressed. Scored only 18 points on 15 shots. He made six of them. He missed all four of his three-pointers. He's going to have bigger scoring nights, but what I was super impressed by was his playmaking ability. He was effectively Duke's point guard tonight. He finished with five assists, and he sprayed the ball all over the floor, driving kicks. He ran pick and roll. He got underneath the basket, made accurate kickouts to the corner. He found shooters on the opposite wing. And at 6'9", he's going to be essentially Duke's point guard this year. They don't have a true point. And so with him, the scoring nights are going to come. Only 6'15" tonight, like I said. But he had a huge dunk in the first half, attacking a closeout. In the second half, he faced up from the left elbow, drove left, finished with his left hand. And in the NBA, when you're projecting him ahead, the cutting opportunities, the screening, that's what's going to be there at his size. And besides, his best skill is defense. And he was everywhere. The intensity, the energy. He was in the passing lanes, finished with three steals. But the play that I'm going to remember from tonight, up 29 points, late in the fourth quarter, dove on the floor, sweat pouring down his face. That is the moment that defines who Cooper Flagg is. He is nonstop energy. He is a game changer with what he can bring on the defensive end of the floor. And his offense, you hope with Duke giving him touches all year long, that that offense will develop. Second thought, the Lakers. Three losses in a row at this point. AD got shaken up tonight late in the game with his ankle. He did finish the game, but losing by 12, 115 to 103 to the Detroit Pistons. Ooh, that's bad news. And I'll tell you what, that starting lineup with Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, too small, can't play defense. It's got to change. It has to change. JJ Redick has to do something about it, or Rob Pelinka has to do something about it. And clearly the guy that needs to change most is D'Angelo Russell. He can't defend. He doesn't offer enough in the playmaking department when he's sharing the floor with AD, LeBron, and Austin Reeves. D'Lo's got to accept moving to the bench, or he's just going to be traded. But overall, though, this Lakers team needs a center. There's not enough size behind AD. Even if they do make a starting lineup change, there's no rim protection with when AD gets pulled out to the perimeter. There's nobody who can help inside. They might have to give up picks to go out and get a Walker Kessler. They got to go out and do something because they don't have size on the floor with or without AD. And when AD went out in the game late in that fourth quarter, it was just a reminder of how screwed this team is. If he misses any amount of time, he has been the Lakers' best player this season by far. LeBron James has looked older aside from that Kings game, including tonight. He does not look like he is anywhere close to the same old LeBron James, even at the end of last season, and maybe he'll trend up. But if you're missing AD for any amount of time, or he's not as amazing as he's been so far this year, and he has been a top five guy so far this NBA season, if he slips from that, this Lakers team will be out of the playoff picture in no time. So they got to make lineup changes, they got to trade D'Lo, and they got to keep AD healthy until LeBron James hopefully keeps trending up. And number three, a quick rookie check-in on the number one pick in the 24 NBA draft. That's Zachary Risacher with the Atlanta Hawks. I'm a little bit worried at this point. 21% from three on the season, 8 of 38, 69% from the free throw line. I had him ranked outside of my top 10 pre-draft. And the reason why I was so much lower on him, clearly, than Atlanta was, taking him number one, was because of the lack of faith in his jump shot. He shot 48% from three over the first half of last season playing overseas. And over the second half of the season, he shot below 30% from three, below 70% from the free throw line, which is in line with what he did every single other season of his professional career that has carried on with the Atlanta Hawks all summer through preseason and now through the regular season. It's early in his career. He does a lot else. He's a good defender already as a really young player. He is somebody who moves the ball. He can attack closeouts. He's got size. I acknowledge all of that. But when you're investing the number one pick in this guy, the shot needs to be there. And tonight, Atlanta loses by 30 against Boston. No surprise there. But Risacher, 1 of 6 from 3. Another poor shooting night for him, and it's got to be concerning if you're a Hawks fan, considering his history, especially when you look around the NBA right now. Granted, there's not a lot of rookies standing out, as I talked about with Tom Haverstraw last week, but you got Zach Edey tonight scoring 25 points, looking like a dominant two-way force for the Memphis Grizzlies, blocking shots around the rim, hitting a trail three. Other rookies are starting to trend up. I want to see it from Reese Shea. I want to see it. And right now I'm not. That's concerning. All right, there's a whole bunch else that happened on Monday night. Like I said, all 30 teams played. A bunch of other college basketball players appeared and made their debuts as well. But we're going to save some of that for later in the week with Tom Haverstraw when I bring him on. For now, though, here's my guest, David Thorpe. You might know him from True Hoop. You might know his book, Basketball is Jazz. He's an awesome, smart basketball mind, and we had a great conversation covering a bunch of teams and topics. Here's David Thorpe coming up after Father John Misty. All right, David, let's talk about the Warriors to start. It feels like something's different with this Warriors team, whether that's all due to Klay, you know, leaving, and the locker room chemistry is better. There's been a lot of passive-aggressive comments coming out of that Warriors locker room about the nature of the team right now. Despite the weaker schedule, it feels like going into this really tough stretch they have coming up, they get three games on the road, Boston, Cleveland, and OKC, and then they're back home against Dallas and Memphis. I'm feeling really good about this Warriors team right now. How about you, David?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it across the board, although they're also, I think, they're like top seven, a lot of different ratings, and they're not turning the ball over very much, which is something they tend to do a lot of.
Doing it without Steph, too. Like, missing multiple games.
Three games, yeah. He's played three games so far. They beat the Pelicans twice without him, and then they just won the other night without him, too. I can't get past the schedule part of it. Like, we have to be fair. But still, you still got to win those games, and they've done that. Defensively, they're dynamic, and they're doing it with interior defense is excellent. Teams are shooting poorly. Maybe it's because they're bad shooting teams. We don't know yet. It's only been six games. But while I'm watching them, like, I'm seeing Looney show on ball screens and get steals and then go coast to coast and scoring. Trace Jackson Davis, that combination of Jackson Davis and Looney is outstanding. Looney might be the defensive player of the year right now for anyone playing less than 16 minutes, 17 minutes a game. He owns the paint. He reminds me of Marc Gasol, just mucking things up all the time in the middle. But Trace is doing a good job too for a guy that's only his second year. That defense, and Buddy Hield's attempting to play defense, competing on defense. And maybe it's because he can't miss. I think he's 55% from three. And Daryl Morey's made this comment too. Players tend to defend more when they're shooting better. They're kind of into it more. We'll see what happens when he goes on an 0-for-15 streak, which is going to come at some point. But they're really playing with some passion and some purpose. Podzimski competes. I don't love the way he passes and doesn't pass, but he competes hard. That matters. I think Steph's been a great leader. Kevin, I noticed the other day, did you see? Kevin Anderson also is playing. Like, Kevin Anderson and Looney are the two best defensive
bigger Kyle dudes. Anderson.
Kyle, sorry.
Yes,
Kyle
sir.
Anderson
Mixing
and
up the case.
Come on. Yeah. They're an amazing defensive duo. But
Kyle Anderson, Kevon Looney, Kevin O'Connor, all these.
Yeah, right. You're right. Thank you. It's already been a long day for me. I'm up since five. So Kyle had the coast to coast all the way down, kind of like D-cell Euro shot off the board, like 5 feet in front of the rim, bucket off the board. And Steph mimicked it on the sideline. The vibe is good. Mm-hmm. And that's Golden State playing defense and having that vibe. That's kind of their thing when they were killing
everyone
before
Klay's gone?
Durant.
Is that why? Is it because Klay's gone? Is it all because of that?
You know, I've never heard from anyone there that was happening in the last few weeks. I'm in touch with them. I don't think it's a stupid thing to suggest. Bad vibes is bad vibes. And clearly he's not hurting what Dallas is doing, but there's just a refreshed feeling, it seems, in the way they're defending. I also think, to be fair, Kenny Atkinson ran their defense last year, doing a great job in Cleveland. He ain't running it in Golden State. And I don't think they loved, from what I've been told, I don't think they loved his approach compared to what they had done previously with Mike and Mike Brown. It's working now. We'll see what happens. You just said their schedule, it gets dramatically tougher. We'll see how they're doing there. Wiggins is shooting great. Draymond is not playing great, but he's shooting great. And then when Steph comes back, we'll see. But I used to always think you can't ever count out LeBron. I feel the same way about Golden State as long as they have Steph. They proved it a couple years ago. They still, their heart is beating at least a little bit right now.
You mentioned Draymond shooting. Last season, he shot 39.5% from three, made 51 out of 129 attempts. So far this season, he's over 40%, 7 of 15 of his three-pointers he has made. Is he doing something different with his three, or from a mechanical standpoint, or do you think this is just small sample size over this past year and you're not reading into it too much of it at all? Are you noticing something about him?
I didn't study him, but I have mentored one of the guys that who like is personal coach for him in the off season, and I've noticed his form is more fluid and he holds his form. I'm a big believer in holding your form. I used to think he chucked it more, like he almost like you're throwing a grenade to get rid of it. He seems like he's just got a more confident stroke, and I don't think it's a small sample size this year, but not over the course of the last season and six games. That's not small. I mean, 100 threes isn't a ton, but it's not five.
Yeah.
It's not 15 even. So,
yep.
No, I think that he's solved something. He's figured something out. It matters because he's such a fulcrum to that. We call it true hoop. We call it the Cuisinart. He's such a, he and Caban both can do it. And now they always have one of those two guys in the game pretty much. And it just helps that offense really flow, even when they're without a point guard. Because the offense is the point guard. It kind of is the system that creates everything they need.
I thought, you know, you mentioned Buddy Hield as well. Udoka had a pretty good quote on Buddy Hield after Saturday's game, which was a great game. Like 31-point comeback for Houston. Golden State, I think, withstood that run, ended up winning the game. Udoka said, Klay Thompson all over again. That's how the Warriors are using Buddy Hield. What have you seen from Buddy Hield so far earlier this season with his production with Golden State?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you think about guys that are good catch and shoot guys. So catch and shoot. Movement shooters, it's just harder to do. It's really hard to do. It requires core strength and fundamentals and footwork. I had an assistant coach last year tell me in person that there's very few people on the planet that can shoot the way Buddy can shoot. And this coach met like every day, like in practice every day, in drills. He is obsessed. Lon Kruger, who coached him at Oklahoma, was one of my biggest mentors when I was a young coach in the late 80s, early 90s. And Lon told me the same thing when he first was drafted, that there's something special about him as a shooter and as a worker. And so, they're using him as a movement guy. It's perfect for what they do. And when you think about Draymond, Caban, Trayce Jackson-Davis now, Kyle Anderson played some point guard at UCLA. He knows how to move the ball and find shooters. That Cuisinart offense is built for guys like Steph and Klay and now Buddy to be able to get shots on the move without having to create off the dribble. And I mean, he just lets it fly too. He's got a super quick trigger. And I'm surprised sometimes when I'm like, oh, Buddy, man, okay, he made it. Like he's feeling it right now. It's a great, he loved it in Indiana because they played fast and shot a lot of threes. It's the same thing in Golden State for him.
When I'm thinking about some of the best movement shooters around the NBA right now, or the best guys using screens, one of the young guys is Grady Dick in Toronto. They use him off screens a lot, some, you know, elaborate actions. And a lot of the time with him, it's not leading to threes as much as it's like slingshotting him towards the basket. Young player, seems like a second year breakout candidate so far in Toronto. What have your impressions been of Grady Dick with the Raptors?
Yeah. So last year on our show, I don't remember if I wrote this, but I said, he might be the worst player in the NBA, but I love him.
He was not great for many stretches last season. Really struggled. He even struggled in the G League when he got opportunities.
Yeah. When I said that, he was bad. I felt badly for him. He should not have been playing in the NBA early on. He just wasn't ready. And remember, as someone who covers the draft like you do, the idea that the NBA drafts you when you're ready is just so beyond ridiculous. It's a myth. There's no one ready for the NBA. Wemby might have been the exception, but he didn't play in college. None of these guys are. Grady Dick wasn't close to being ready. I give him a ton of credit. I love big-time shooters with size that play incredibly hard. We have a lot of driveway shooters, guys that can really shoot, and you have to create for them. And they don't really compete on defense. They don't really bust their ass on. He does. And so I'm a huge fan of what he's doing. He's already had two 30-plus games. He scored like 20 a game. It helps that Scotty's out. RJ is actually playing well. Emmanuel's out. I think Quickly has been out for a little bit. And so we get some, what I call it, oxygen. Playing time is oxygen. You got to get it. But yeah, I mean, so the guys that can move, coming off single, double action, just chasing the ball and get games. So you throw it to a guy, DHO, get it. They go under the screen, you shoot it. Racing to the corner, catch, shoot. It's just hard to do. You practice it a lot, but most guys aren't real great at it. And I think he's got a talent for it. And he's showing it. It really opened up an offense up and just going to make Scotty that much better and RJ and Emmanuel that much better that they have a shooter like this, and they'll help him too.
I mean, I think you nailed it. He's not just, you know, driveway shooter. He crashes the boards. No. He cuts so into the paint. He plays his ass off on defense. Like, I think to me, that's where Grady Dick, even going back, you know, to Kansas, his freshman year there, kind of a unexpected, you know, one and done, but he was so good there and showed so many flashes. I think his passing feel as well is something that over the course of time in this Toronto offense that they develop, that could be something that develops for him over the course of time. But he's not just a shooter. He brings so many different ingredients to the floor. Does that separate him from a lot of these, like no disrespect to Jordan Hawkins. I love Jordan Hawkins, but Grady Dick is 6'6", 6'7". He's bigger, has more length. That's what I think gives Grady Dick more of that, you know, potential all-star, you know, upside as a player, whereas some of these other guys are more high-end, you know, role players. Do you see Grady Dick with the similar upside that I do?
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyone that can shoot like that and compete, it really comes down to that. Charles Lee the other day was lamenting his star talent point guard, LaMelo Ball's lack of competitiveness on defense, especially to the point where he's fouling. He's fouled out three times already. You've got to compete. It's one of the things that someone who evaluates players all the time, not just for Troop, but for my own businesses and player development. If you don't have that fundamental competitive spirit at a high, high level, the league's going to be tough for you to do well in. I happen to love Jordan Hawkins too. I think he's really good. He's just shorter and skinnier and weaker. He's never going to be really, you know, strong. Gabe Grady's got a good build on him. He's that. As long as he keeps that competitive fight, because that's what it really comes down to. It's an effing fight all the time for important spots on the court. I want to get to where I want to go, and you don't want me to get there. And I don't want you to get to where you want to go, but you want to get there. It's a fight, and he seems. Like, I would have strongly urged him not to wear that suit on draft night. I think these players get too caught up in the style.
You weren't a big fan of that big red sparkly outfit? You wouldn't rock that, David?
No. I don't care if he rocks it once he's a star. I think these guys, they put the cart before the horse too much. And I'm not superstitious. You can call me old school. But I know that it's pretty much impossible to have one more than one conscious thought at a time as human beings. Computers can do that. We can't. We're different process. And I just want these guys focused on being better at basketball and not get caught up in the other stuff. The other stuff comes when you're good at basketball. It can't not come. The money comes, the fame comes, everything else comes. That's what I preach to my guys anyway. Let's be known for how we play. The other stuff gets to be fun after that.
I mean, the money comes almost for literally every player as soon as they enter the NBA. Even the
real smallest, big money, though.
The real, yeah, you're talking about, yeah. About big money. Even that is like a 4-year, $40 million contract. That is big money. But you're talking about the $200 million deals where if you really, really put the work in, that is the big carrot hanging out there, generational wealth for so many of these different types of guys. It almost makes you wonder. How do some guys just not work hard when that reward is out there? Is it about not
that's
caring about money, or is it about like the money?
Podcast
is the money so that's, good for lower level guys that's enough for some of them?
Right. It's I'm happy at any time. Anytime I want to talk about this, this is what I do for a living. I try to help players make more money. And sometimes they're in college, and obviously I have young NBA players too. And my best players in the NBA, the ones that make the most money. They enjoy their money. They build beautiful homes and gyms and all that kind of stuff. And they travel, not just first class, but they travel privately, typically, not always, but typically. but they get their work in. And they are sponges, Kevin, for information. They want every edge imaginable. And they'll fly people in to help them. And they will consult with whomever to keep that edge. That's competitive. That's what we're talking about. They want to keep being successful. And most of these guys have pride. They don't want to just make that money. They don't want to be seen as thieves when they start going down while the money's going up. They don't want that. They want to earn. They want to be worth what they're being paid, in most cases anyway. And so
those guys are the ones that it's not even about the money. The money is the reward, but it's just about the competitiveness. And those are the guys that are just wired to be the greatest that they could possibly be, right? Like, it's not even about the money for those ones.
I completely agree with you. And it sounds cliche, but I had a player tell me recently, he's young, but this guy's going to be an all-star level player. He's not there now. And he said to me, he said, "Coach, I know you hear this before," but he said, "I really would play this game for nothing. I'm at my happiest. I'm joyous when I'm playing basketball. And I really feel like, and listen, it ain't easy, Kevin. They got to lift weights and they have to eat right. And they have to not eat the pizza and drink the Coke and the iced tea with sweetener, all that. Those aren't the hardest sacrifices. The work is, and the rehab sucks. When you get injured in rehab, I've never had to do that. I've coached too many players that have for too many years. When you have no idea when you're going to play again, then you've got maybe a year's worth. I've had players with ACL and Achilles tears. It just requires a commitment. You can't think about the money. It's too far away and it's too hard. They're just competitive with what they know they have to do today. And so again, going back to where this started from, it's not about the fancy suit you wear on draft night. You want to be remembered for how you play, not how you dress. Because if they remember how you play, they'll remember how you dress later anyway.
A reminder to people listening, please subscribe to The Kevin O'Connor Show wherever you're listening and give us a 5-star rating. All right, David, we got news on Monday that Greg Popovich suffered a health issue over the weekend and now he's going to be out indefinitely away from the Spurs. Mitch Johnson, their assistant coach, is expected to be the interim head coach for an indefinite period of time. What do you know about Mitch Johnson? And obviously the situation sucks for Pop. And the Spurs, hopefully he's able to get back healthy. But, you know, for at least for now, it seems like Mitch Johnson will be the replacement. What do you know about him?
Very little, if not nothing. I did not know about this, Kevin. I've been doing shows all morning and watching tape, so I didn't know anything. I'm really super sad. I hope everything's fine. I know that there's been, I think, a degradation of the Spurs way these last few years, where I think they've let some talented players go. I am happy with Devin Vassell's progress, and Victor, I think, last year really grew. This year, they're playing defense. It helps to have Wemby, that's for sure. But they're top five defense, I believe, right now. And so I think they were kind of, I think they're 3-3 on the year. They're kind of finding their way back. And so the hope is he can't be Pop for the obvious reasons. But the other thing is Pop still kind of does connect with young players. I've had young players play for him the last few years, and he's sweet and thoughtful and considerate and not afraid to coach his guys. That's not the gravitas he has. Just no one else has it in the NBA, certainly not in San Antonio. But it's also going to be a rallying thing of if he was hand selected by Pop to be that person. They're a young team, so I think they'll handle it just fine. And my guess is they'll want to play. Listen, they might watch a little more tape. Pop is famous for saying he doesn't want to watch tape. They might be doing things a little bit more of whatever than they were before. He is in his, I think, mid to late 70s.
And 75 almost years 60. Old.
How 75, yeah. So yeah. That's not young. That's just no way. My mom's 83. I'm going to be 60 soon. Like, I get it. And so maybe this will work out in the short term. But obviously, I hope Pop's doing great, because it was going to be fun to see him back in the playoffs this year. I really think I think they could be a play-in team at the very least.
I think so too. And I mean, obviously they need Devin Vassell back. He's still out through Monday. We'll see if he returns on Wednesday or later this week for the Spurs. He's so important to that team. So it's hard to, I don't want to full on judge the Spurs with the way they've been playing offensively until they get Devin Vassell back. One team that I am worried about offensively, in particular, one player, and that's Tyrese Halliburton. Halliburton this season is averaging a career worst scoring efficiency across the board, career low from 2-point range, career low from three, career low even from the free throw line. And if you dive into the stats with his shooting trends, So far this season, he's shooting only 9% of his shots at the rim. That's down from 15% last postseason. And then last year, he had his hamstring injury. Before the injury, it was at 20%. After at 19%, minimal difference. But the season before that, it was 26%. So it's been a steady decline for Halliburton getting to the basket. Now, last year, with his decreased three-point percentage, his worsening scoring efficiency, and he wasn't getting to the basket quite as much, people contributed that to the hamstring injury. I've heard with Halliburton, I've had some sources around the league tell me that they believe it's not his hamstring that's the cause of his struggles this year. It's his back. He had back spasms in the postseason. He's still wearing the heating pack on the bench. And I think that would make sense with the trends and the way in which he's playing, the declining efficiency, because back issues are tough to deal with. What have you seen from Halliburton this year, David? Are you concerned about his decline right now? Because it doesn't seem like there's many positive indicators that he's going to get back to that all-NBA level player we saw in the first half of last year.
I actually know a good amount. I was lucky enough to be invited. Pascal Siakam from the Pacers invited his whole team to the gym he has in Orlando. And it's not far from me, so I was invited to be able to come watch. And I saw Tyrese throwing lob dunks to himself. He shot the ball well. He did not play in any of the 5-on-5. That's all they really did. They worked out a little bit, and they played 5-on-5. He did not play in the 5-on-5, but he worked out every morning. And I thought he looked pretty good. And then I was able to see him pregame this year. They played the Magic, so I went over there. And I saw him pregame looking good, moving well. On the court, it's been a mess. Absolute mess. I've heard about the back thing. I've had people, I've written about Tyrese recently too. I've had people tell me that when you have one hamstring injury, okay, you can be recovered from it, okay. A second one, which it seems like he had two last year, could be devastating for you. And I can't explain the science of it. I'm just a basketball coach. But I understand what that means when they tell me there's real issues with it after when you have the second one. He had back issues last year too. I also think, Kevin, it's in his head. He has turned down wide open 8-foot floaters more than a few times this year. I've watched him play a lot. He just can't go by anyone off the dribble. So he's got to just rely on his right side step three that he was so good at before the hamstring injury last year. I remember looking up the numbers when I wrote my article a couple weeks ago. He was like 32-31% after January 8th when he got hurt January 7th. I think he's even, I forget what he is now, but he might be even below that now from three. I don't remember what he is from three right now because he's not creating as much. He might be shooting better.
He is below it now.
And he's not even taking as many tough shots. Remember, he was shooting close to 40% on those shots. He can't even do the sidestep stuff. He just can't get to it. So he's getting better quality shots now than he ever has, and he's shooting poorly. He also admitted, I lead the league in air balls. He said that the other day. I thought it was cute that he can be kind of self-deprecating, but it's a sign of a bigger problem. So there's real issues with him. He is competing more defensively without question. You see him at the point of attack. You see him helping with a little more purpose and physicality. That part's good. But their team is the point guard is so pivotal. If you remember, the games 3 and 4 against Boston, he didn't play at all. And Indiana could have easily won both games, including game one when he did play. I had Brad Stevens, I had an assistant coach for the Celtics, and a player for the Celtics tell me the best guard they faced in the postseason was Andrew Nembhard, Tyrese's replacement at the one, who plays the two. So my point is nothing against Andrew Nembhard and nothing against Tyrese Halliburton, but the way they play really does help a talented point guard. It helps his talent be enhanced even more. And so if you don't have Tyrese playing at a high level, Indiana's cooked as currently constructed because he's making so much money. The hope is he works his way out of it. I have no idea if he will. He is trying hard on defense, which tells me the back thing doesn't wash with me when I see him playing defense the way he's playing it. I think it's in his head. I think he's a little scared of what can I really do? And then he's just not ever shot like this before. That's scary too, like having the yips in baseball from the second base to the first base throw. The hope is he'll figure it out because he's a marvelous, marvelous talent, especially when he's starting to guard a little bit now.
I mean, he was one of the funnest players to watch in the NBA the first half of last season. He's outstanding. He's fun. He plays with joy, a flair. His playmaking is just glorious to watch on the court. I love Tyrese Haliburton, but that guy is not there right now. And you're right. Maybe the hamstring and maybe the back stuff that's floating out there, maybe that's just all insignificant compared to the mental aspect. Because the free throw shooting being below 80% for the first time, maybe in his life, he was an 80%+ guy in college at Iowa State. He's been 80%+ every year in the NBA, but he's below 80% for the first time. That might indicate that there's something mental going on in addition to everything else that you're seeing with the ball in his hands. Like you said, not taking these floaters, inability to create in the same way. Is that in part maybe because he's been scouted at this point? Are teams defending him a little bit differently that you're seeing at all?
Well, certainly with more purpose, more force, without question of that. But they saw him last year. He was really good for the end of the year before.
He's an all-star.
No, right. I think he's been humbled in a way that he's not used to. This is a very common thing, by the way. And I'm happy to say it's a bit of where I can kind of build my businesses from and always have. Is it's easy to play great when you're already playing great. But how do you manufacture that when you hit your slump or your struggles, whether it's injury, lack of playing time, coach doesn't believe in you? There's lots of reasons why players will struggle. I try to be a voice of reason with them. I really call myself a problem solver as much as anything. I try to solve their problems on the court. I don't work with Tyrese, but I do watch him play a ton. How can you love basketball and not want to watch that guy play? And again, especially because he is trying, but there is... He looks confused as to what can I do? What should I do? That's an issue. He did lose Buddy Hield last year, Kevin. That's important. We talked about Buddy before. I coined the Pacers offense blur ball because Buddy would set those blur screens, would be running towards Tyrese, blur off it, veer off it, ghost it. You can call it slip it. They're all the same thing. The blur is the different part because you're running with pace. You're not just jogging up there. You're racing. It's hard to race towards a screen, veer off it, catch, shoot three, but he could do that well. His gravity allowed those defenders. Remember, Hubie Brown always taught, we set screens for one reason, make defenders think. Genius. Smartest nugget of wisdom I ever heard about basketball. You set screens for one reason, make defenders think. So Buddy's man would come towards Tyrese. Tyrese's man knows Buddy's man's coming. They're talking. I got to choose Tyrese. I got to choose Buddy. While they're thinking, that indecision or just decision-making poorly either created a shot for Buddy or a hard straight line vertical drive for Tyrese. Well, that guy's not there. They don't have anyone yet. Ben Shepherd, I think, can get there. He's not there. Siakam is a very good target, but not for and he's shooting great from three, but not as a blur screener. He'll blur and maybe get to the nail or get to the middle of the court where he's dynamic from. Tyrese is not turning that corner hard, rejecting it, getting in the lane. He's shooting shots thinking, I'm Tyrese Haliburton. I'm going to make this shot. And it worked last year until it didn't. Although he did make one big shot in the playoffs, if you remember. It might have been the Knicks game where he made a big three. Maybe it was a Bucks game. I don't remember. But it was an amazing game winner. It's not happening this year for him. So do you let him keep doing it? Probably. I'm guessing he'll just keep doing it. Empower him. They can't be right if he's not close to being an all-star. And right now he's not terrible. He's an average player, but they need him to be much better than average.
I mean, what doesn't hurt? I mean, the Pacers, like you said, Haliburton issue number one. It hurts them also. They lose two of their centers to, unfortunately, torn Achilles. They lose James Wiseman. They lose Isaiah Jackson. So they've been depleted at the center position. Their depth is not what it was without those guys. They have at least the option. Not that they're great players by any means, but to have them playing behind Miles Turner. The Pacers clearly are a team at this point that they're going to have to make another trade, too. They get Pascal Siakam last year. They're a big move. They're probably going to have to make some other moves around the edges this year.
Well, I would have argued, I did argue, before the injuries to their second or third string center, who, by the way, both can play. Wiseman was looking like there's some traction here.
He's figuring stuff out. He was.
Right. And he's the 13-foot lob threat that Miles Turner is. You can pick a pop with Miles all you want. He loves doing that. But as Tyrese comes downhill or Nembhard or Siakam come downhill off ball screen action, that big who's at the rim has to make a choice. If you guard, all those guys can finish. I've got the lob. You stay home, they make their shot. Either way, it's a win for them.
And Isaiah Jackson, too. Another lob guy. Gone.
Unbelievable talent as an athlete and rim protector. Wiseman wasn't a great rim protector, shockingly. His hand-eye coordination isn't there, it seems to me. Isaiah's was. So they've got to find someone new. I like them running it back because Mathurin didn't play last year. He would probably help them. He was a net negative player last year, but he's allowed to grow. Ben Shepherd was a rookie starting the Eastern Conference Finals, and they almost won those two games that he started. He started in place of Tyrese. He's going to get nothing but better, you would think. Nembhard is coming off a fabulous playoff, signed a big deal. There was no reason to think he's missed the last couple games. I heard he's playing today. I thought they were a team on the rise. My big concern besides those two injuries is Miles Turner has been really disappointing also. In a contract year, I did not expect that. Maybe he'll come around. Siakam's been their only consistent player. Nesmith's been okay. He got hurt the other day in a close loss on the road to, I think, New Orleans. Yeah. He started off 5 for 5 and then didn't play the rest of the game. So they're dealing with some bad injuries, but they have no choice but to do something. You have no backup center. Enrique Freeman's a two-way player who's really more of a four-man. He's their backup five. They've got to do something to get something. And there's some team. They're not the only team that needs help, but they definitely need help with that backup five position.
Robert Williams is making his debut for the Blazers this week, his return. I feel like he'd be a guy that I'd love to target if I'm the Pacers for all the reasons you listed. They're missing their lob threat. Robert Williams can provide that. He's injury prone himself, of course, but you know, maybe go get Time Lord from Portland. The question is the difficulty for Indiana. Before the season, I wrote, this will be the year that, you know, the Pacers or Pacers fans say Mathurin's the guy that we have to trade. The problem is, if Halliburton's struggling, I think it necessitates Mathurin's presence being there even more, making him less of a trade asset for your team. So for Indiana, you need Halliburton to be better in order to feel like you can trade a Mathurin to get something of value back. And even then, Mathurin for Robert Williams, I don't think is equal value. Mathurin's younger, still on his rookie deal, doesn't have an injury history like Robert Williams does. You would need more in return. Is there a player out there that you think the Pacers should be looking at to help shore up that center spot?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. So I agree with everything you said, and I did think there'd be some consolidation from Indiana. I'm hearing they're looking at JaVale McGee.
I see.
That doesn't excite me if I'm a Pacer fan, but I understand it.
No, not at all. You know? It might not even get aggregated. You saying that? It just might. JaVale McGee.
Right. Right. His athleticism. He can jump still. He's played for a long time. He sat the bench for a long time. There are other people that that they go after. You know, Miami is playing Thomas Bryant behind Bam Adebayo. He's doing extremely well on both ends, and he can shoot. He played in Indiana. But why would Miami trade him? Kevin Love's been gone. He's back now. I don't know if he's going to play or not. And so I don't think they'll go after Kevin Love, but they could if it turns out he's going to be the third string because they have the kid they drafted this last year in Miami as their third string. But listen, the Lakers are going to need someone. Jackson Hayes is in some trouble now. So if he's out, they don't have another center. The Kings are playing Trey Lyles as their backup five. That's not working out good. It's good to be a 7-foot guy that can shoot and protect the rim. If you can do that, you can play in the NBA a long damn time because just not many guys that can do that, and there's teams that really need help right there.
And this also speaks to why Utah is holding on so tight to Walker Kessler.
I think
not a shooter, but he is that rim protector. He is that lob guy, a good screener. He's that guy that can solve a lot of issues. You know who I like? He's not a 7-footer. He's out right now for the Nets. He has a hamstring injury, but Dameron Sharp, 6'9", vacuums rebounds, good screener. He's got great passing feel, kind of a good connective piece. Dameron Sharp's one of those guys that I'd love to see him on a winning team at some point someday. Maybe it'll be one of those teams that you're mentioning.
Well, that and also we mentioned Looney before. Looney's backing up Trayce Jackson-Davis. I don't know why. He's better than Trayce Jackson-Davis, in my opinion. This version, minus 25 pounds. I think I looked up the other day. I saw there's three dudes that have 20 or more offensive rebounds, 7 or more steals, 4 or more blocks. Şengün is an all-star. Jokic, who's the world's best, and Looney in way less minutes. So I could see where a team would say, listen, he's in a contract year. We can do something for a longer haul. Whether he's our starter or not, it's a separate issue. And Golden State doesn't want to probably trade him. He's a nice player for them, and they're doing well. But if they don't want to commit to him starting, I could see some of that happening. It's just not a lot of teams that have depth. The ones that do, like you mentioned with Portland, with Ayton and Klingon and Robert Williams,
they gotta move somebody.
Someone's gonna be moved.
They have to. Yeah,
someone's
have to move somebody.
Someone's gonna be moved, and you'll get some for him because teams are desperate.
Up next, we're going to open up the mailbag together. If you want to participate in next week's mailbag, send over your questions to kocshow@yahoosports.com. All right, David, appreciate you sticking around for some mailbag questions. We got one from John. He sent an email and said, Cade has taken a leap and he looks like an all-star. Ivy looks solid as well. The rest of the Pistons have been awful. Do the Pistons need to blow it up again and build around Cade, or just blow it up entirely?
Boy, I love that because I was thinking the same thing, not the blow up part, but I've said this on
Cade,
my show.
Cade and Ivy, the good parts. You like that?
I like their backcourt. I like that combination of the, I don't care if it's the, who's the one, who's the two. You've got the uber athletic Ivy, who's smaller, and the tall, very skilled, and still dynamic, though slower, but still dynamic in Cade. I just love that combination going forward. Ivy is playing on both ends, shooting it well. Listen, Ivy 2 years ago was the Grady Dick of the class. He was absolutely terrible. If you look at his metrics last year, he was pretty average. That's a meteoric rise. So I've been writing about this and talking about it on my show. Like most guys who are terrible, they tend to stay terrible. He jumped to being pretty average. Great. Now he's above average and he's like 22 years old. So I love that. Asar Thompson, I love, because anyone that can't shoot at all and still finds ways to impact possessions, that's a winner for me. If you can just get him to be average as a shooter, but he's out with the blood clot issue. I've heard things are moving in the right direction. I talked to two people close to him yesterday. I don't know anything beyond that, but that would be three problem solvers.
Yes.
And so it's a start anyway, right?
It's everything else. It's Jalen Duren is not quite the same. Doesn't feel like he's the same level defensive player you expected him to be in year three.
He's and the same guy he's always been.
Exactly. And that's where some concern is there, where it's like, well, you were hoping he'd be 6'10", switchable, versatile, elite rim protector, and a lob guy. But really right now, he's just a lob guy and a rebounder, but not quite the defender that you were hoping for. And everybody else on that team is kind of just, besides Ron Hall, and you're making the investment in him, you hope Bobby Clintman, he can turn into something. I still like Isaiah Stewart. There's some solid players, but ultimately this is about what level does Cade reach? And I think Cade this year is shooting nearly 40% from three. He's always been a great mid-range shooter. He's always been an elite free throw shooter. It seems like finally the three-point shot is translating for him. It actually is happening. And so that's what matters more than anything else for the Pistons. I don't think they're a blow-it-up team. They already suck. You want to keep Cade. You want to keep investing in Ivy. Get Asar Thompson back on the floor and hope Ron Holland, you know, develops and becomes a quality player. But I like where the Pistons are right now. But, yes, they do have some concerns, and they need to figure out the center spot. A question from Jordan. Jordan asks, which NBA team has the best chance of going full soap opera? And I have a feeling, David, that I know what your answer is going to be, because 1 year ago you wrote that the Bucks should trade Giannis. 1 year ago you wrote that. And now that's the topic of conversation that everybody's having, including me on my show last Friday with Tom Haverstraw. We talked about that. But I'm guessing you're going to say Milwaukee as the team that has the chance to go full soap opera.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of it from that point of view, because I thought of it a year ago and no one seemed to think that was a good idea. a year ago, I wrote and talked about, I don't know if OKC would do it, but I thought they could maybe get Chet and Giddey and a bunch of picks.
Too late.
There's no way
that.
OKC would never do that now.
Not a chance.
But a year ago? You never know. Maybe they get Jalen Williams instead. That'd be fine, by the way. He's fantastic. No chance they would. I don't think there's a chance that now. I could be wrong.
Zero percent chance. There's no way in hell OKC would trade Chet for
Giannis. I feel the same way. So they missed their chance. Henry Abbott, the founder of Troop, wrote last week Like, you got to be right and you got to be a year early. He was quoting someone. That wasn't coming from me. So, yeah, it seems like it's a mess there. And the problem is they hired the wrong guy. I don't think they should go after Dame. That's a separate issue. He's playing well. Dame's not the problem. Doc's the problem, as I see it anyway. And it's just a mess there.
What is it about Doc being a problem? I'm curious. What is it about his schemes that you see that makes him one of the problems on the team?
Yeah, to start with, and this is the easier thing to see, I don't think he trusts young players at all.
Not at all.
And
never has.
Henry wrote, right. Never has. Well, at least not in my memory. Henry wrote something just the other day where he talked about it even today. The Bucks in the last 4 years have played three players 1,000 minutes in a season under the age of 25. Three. I won't tell you, because we're writing about it, who's number one, but it's 10 times as many. And there's a bunch of teams that played over 20 guys over 1,000 minutes under the age of 25. So it's not just Doc, as Bud was there first. They've just not invested. Oxygen is the lifeblood. Playing time is the oxygen for players. It's their lifeblood. You have to let them play. Let them make mistakes. Let them learn from their mistakes, or also learn from their successes and build genuine confidence, because they already did the genuine work. Now they have the genuine results, and that gives you genuine confidence. That's the formula that I've always used. They just haven't done any of that. So it's no surprise. And Beauchamp has played some. But he just, nothing's clicked for him. Obviously,
they also didn't pick up his third year deal.
Right.
Exactly. They're done
Correct.
With him.
They're already gone with him. Middleton's been out, but I just don't see any answer. And in terms of Doc, I think I remember, this may not be the answer you're looking for, but I remember watching on NBA TV when he was in Philly, opening day of practice. So day of training camp, the NBA TV does those live things. Right. And it was Doc and Harden. And Doc was just talking Harden's ear off. And the guys on the show were saying, oh, this is, you know, the veteran Doc talking to, you know, James Harden. So I know his agent. So I texted them and said, like, these guys got it all wrong. Doc should be listening. This is James Harden. He could write some of the most interesting books on basketball and pick and roll in ever to be read or written. I would be listening to James a ton. I just don't think Doc sees it that way anymore. And the guys just aren't buying in at all.
I mean, it's a shame, really, because Giannis is still an elite talent. Dame,
yeah.
I mean, he's not, his threes have not fallen for him in the same way that you'd hope for so far, but he looks more healthy. He looks like a guy that wants to, exactly. But so you have Dame, you have Giannis, but together they still haven't clicked an elite level chemistry-wise like some other duos have around in the NBA. And the supporting cast is just terrible. It's horrible. That's in part because they've whiffed on picks. It's in part maybe because they haven't invested in those guys enough. I mean, like, I like Andre Jackson a lot out of UConn. I thought he was a strange pick for that team because of the iffy jump shot that he has. So, but they also haven't invested in him. They also haven't given him consistent minutes to build that confidence that you're talking about. So it's in part on Doc. It's in part on the front office for all the whiffs they've had. The AJ Johnson pick this year, I mean, look, maybe in year 7, AJ Johnson turns into something, but he's 160 pounds. He stunk playing in Australia last year. I still don't get it. I still don't get why the Bucks did that. I've talked about it with Tom Haverstraw on my podcast last Friday. I am just very confused on what the Bucks are doing. So I think the answer to that question, who has the best chance to be a soap opera, it is the Bucks. It already is the Bucks. Are there any other teams that you think have the makings of potentially being a soap opera as this season develops?
Yeah, I'll say one that's going to surprise you a little bit, only because it's such a well-run franchise, and that's the Miami Heat.
Wow.
Because I'm not loving what I'm seeing from Jimmy. He's a little bit surly, more so than normal. I've talked to some people inside there. They're not a great chemistry. They're playing fine. They're 3-2. They're playing fine. Their bench unit's doing great. The starters right now aren't doing very good. That's where Jimmy is. Doesn't have a contract. I could see he's not afraid of drama. I could see it going south there.
I think Miami's a good one. And Jimmy Butler being the main reason why. Wasn't this the year that we were supposed to get playoff Jimmy Butler?
Yeah.
The regular season, we're going to see Butler giving great effort. great intensity the whole year through. I don't think that's happened necessarily.
No, and they're really, Kevin, they're a selfish team. I watched them play three or four times and was shocked at how often Jaime Jaque, I told an agent from UCLA, who he went to UCLA, he's the most selfish player in the league right now. Jaime Jaquez, he just want to pass the ball. Someone's telling him, keep shooting it, because he keeps shooting it against two and three people. I love them coming out of college, but I'm not, I don't like what I'm seeing.
Not a selfish player. He was not a selfish player at UCLA.
No, I just don't, they're just not, when Tyler Hero is trying to be the adult on the court, that's an issue. Because it's not really normally one of his traits. So, yeah, I think it's just a mess there. Maybe it'll, I mean, if any team can figure it out, I think it's Miami. But right now I see the potential for some dark times coming if they don't kind of solve some of those issues.
Now, Miami has never been a team in part because Pat Riley, the way he's wired, they've never been a team that's tried to bottom out. But this year, their first round pick is top 14 protected. Otherwise, it goes to Oklahoma City. With Cooper Flagg and Ace Bailey, and it's a strong draft at the top.
Harper, yeah.
Yes, Harper, it's really good. And college basketball starting on Monday. They'll be going to be watching and talking about it on this podcast as well. I look forward to doing a lot of draft stuff this year. With Miami, if you're going to do it, if you're going to try to miss the playoffs, if you're going to trade Jimmy Butler, get picks, to me, this feels like the year to do that, doesn't it? Like, this is the year to do it.
I hadn't thought about it, but because I don't like thinking about it. That's why I haven't thought about it. But you make a good argument. It's not a well-constructed team. And when your best player is 35, I think Jimmy is, and not under contract, I don't love their direction. Other than Bam, who's not playing well, by the way. But I love him. Love Bam. Shooting threes. Last year, they only had Kevin Love shoot threes. Now Bryant shooting threes, Bam shooting threes. I love that. And they're playing faster. They're trying to play faster anyway. But the coverage's pretty bare talent-wise.
Last question here from Simon. He said, who do you think is the next bright future NBA team? And now with my podcast over the years, my writing over the years, I've had teams dubbed the bright future Suns, the bright future this team, the bright future that team. That I think the next bright future team might be the Washington Wizards, the bright future Wizards, because you got Bilal Coulibaly, who looks like he looks like he's going to be a superstar. He really does. Like, you look at him 2 years ago playing for the Mets 92 junior squad, and then he gets promoted to play next to Wemby with Mets 92, and then look at him last year with the Wizards, and then this year, he has always been a great defensive talent. He's always shown the ability to become a spot-up guy, attack closeouts, but they have him running pick and roll more often. He's using change of pace, misdirection. He looks more advanced with the ball in his hands on pull-ups and on drives to the basket. Coulibaly is the main reason I think that you can look at the Wizards and say, okay, they're a bright future team. Would you agree with Washington? Is there enough else around him to feel good about Washington as that team?
Well, I definitely love Coulibaly. And I've been watching Sar on tape. And he's done some good things. Yeah, he can't shoot yet, but he's shooting. Yeah. I love they're letting him shoot. I think he's maybe 6-for-25 on the season. Great. Knock yourself out. Like, Kevin Durant shot a whole bunch of bad shots when he was a rookie in Seattle. It worked out okay for him. Let him fail. He's blocking shots. He's playing with energy. Yeah, those two guys both, and I think they're both French. They can speak French to each other well. Yeah. So I was kidding. So they have the same agent. So, I don't know about their infrastructure. I just don't know their coach. I've heard good things. I've heard very good things, actually. I'm certainly happy with what I'm seeing from Coulibaly, especially considering as a rookie last year, I thought training Denny was kind of weird. I'm a Dia fan, although he's not working out great in Portland. So far anyway, as a shooter, but I think the Wizards are a good call. I think Portland has got the bones of being really good too. They haven't seen anyone take that leap though. Scoot hasn't taken that leap the way Bilal has.
Scoot a little bit better in year two so far, which is nice to see. You know,
right.
A little bit
not
better.
Not the Bilal's average like 20 a game. Right.
Of course.
But Bilal's
average
like 20 a game.
Bilal looks like the real deal. And I think the other thing, you know, you mentioned Sar with George as well, their rookie, grew from 6'5" to 6'8" over the past year or so. And it was reported this week that he had his growth plates scanned and they're still open, apparently. So he could grow to 6'10". And Bob Carrington has had some good scoring nights, good bucket getter.
He has.
There's some good things happening with Washington right now that makes them a more appealing team to watch. When last year I thought they were one of the worst teams in the league to watch with Jordan Poole just chucking out there. But I've found myself enjoying the Wizards a bit more. And you mentioned the Blazers. Klingon, man, like they got to move Ayton, I think, or start playing two bigs. Like you got to get Klingon more minutes, dude. Like you have to. I understand what they're doing, playing with Scoot off the bench, but I want to see Klingon out there for 25, 30 minutes. Maybe they don't want to do it because it's too soon. Maybe he's too good defensively where you don't want to be that good this soon. That could be by design if you're Portland. So that's the other way to look at
it. We also should mention Utah. In part because of what they might get for Markkanen, who's amazing. Sexton, too, I think is a talented player. They've got some good young players. Obviously, the injury to Hendricks is devastating because he had a chance to be a really good rim-protecting three-point shooter, which our league's so desperate for. But you got to play these guys. They're not going to learn from the bench. You got it, as Milwaukee is learning, you got to play them.
Well, David, appreciate you joining me on today's episode. Where can we find your stuff?
So I'm at True Hoop, truehoop.com, where we do two shows a week, and then we write a newsletter or two every week as well. And you can just go to the website and look us up, or I think you can subscribe via Substack also.
Appreciate you joining me today, David. Thanks to Joe, Brett, and the team for producing. Please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. It really does help out. Hope you enjoy your week.